around in this great big city. Fast money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I worked hard trying to make my bones, but times have changed and I just got to move. Can't run away, can't run away, can't run. I can't run away, can't run away from the things that I've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Frank Collada Show, Frank's World, where Frank's guests will include former mobsters and lawmen, businessmen and women and entertainers. You can participate in tonight's show by calling in with your question or comment at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. Tonight's show is brought to you by MobCon 2014, which will be held on September 27th and 28th at the Palace Station Hotel and Casino in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. As author and screenwriter Nick Pileggi said, MobCon is the real deal. For more information or to register for the conference, visit www.mob-con.net. Tonight, Frank's guest will be author, screenwriter, and musician John Damore. And without further ado, here's the man himself, Mr. Frank Collada.
Thank you, Denny. Thank you very much. Now, listen, I won't be able to talk that long because I lost my voice, so I'm struggling right now. John is going to be my guest, and I've had him on the show before, John Damore. A few things I want to say about MobCon before I turn it over to you to talk a little bit. I'll still stay on the wire with us. Is I want to make a little conversation here about MobCon. This MobCon is coming up the 26th, 7th, and 8th. There's three dates there. The 26th is strictly for the bus tour. That's completely separate of MobCon. That's one fee. Anybody else wants to go to MobCon, of course, for 2 days, they'll have a fee there. To contact the person about the fee, her name would be Becky, and she could be reached at, now this is for only the people that are listening to this interview right now that are going to get this deal. Contact Becky at 702-807-8036. We got about 20 tickets I want to get rid of. You get 20% off straight across the board on whatever tour you want, whatever event you want to participate in. Mention that to Becky, that I'm giving you 20% off because you listened to tonight's show with John and me and Denny. All right, now I'm going to go over to Mr. Damore. The last time we had a conversation, it was a good conversation, and I wish I could talk more, but I'm going to jump in every once in a while. You're going to be talking with, of course, you know him, Denny Griffey. And, before I kick it back over to you, for you people that intend to go to MobCon or are contemplating it or whatever, you better do it this time because I'm going to be taking off a couple of years. I'm not going to be doing it for at least a couple of years. It's a rough job. Nobody realizes how hard it is to get genuine speakers. So I will be taking at least 2 or 3 years off. So if you want to see me, you better buy them tickets. All right, John, go for it, buddy.
Hi, everybody. This is John Damore. Frank, thanks a lot for having me on the show again. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on the same stage with you. And I can't wait. Just to everybody know, let everybody know, I'm one of the guest speakers that will be there at MobCon 2014. I'm going to talk about what I did back in Las Vegas from 1975 to 1977 that was part of one of the biggest scams to ever hit the Vegas casinos during that time. And it's going to be my honor to be on that stage with Frank. And Dennis, how you doing? It's so good knowing you and good talking to you.
Well, thank you, John. Great having you back on the show. We appreciate you coming back on with us.
My pleasure.
And you know what I'd like to do, John, if you would, for people who didn't listen to the last show, I want to talk tonight, at least part of the show, about your book. Okay, the boss always sits in the back. I stress always sits in the back. And what I'd like you to do, if you could just, again, for those people who didn't hear the last show, if you could give us a little background on the book, the concept and the idea and how you happened to write the book, and then I've got some questions I'd like to ask you about the book and the process when you're finished. So go ahead, John, and fill in the listeners
Fine.
About your book.
As you said when Frank and you introduced me, that besides being a writer, and then years later I wound up working in Hollywood as a screenwriter, but when I got out of high school, by that time I was already a trained musician. I had been taking guitar lessons since I was 7, and by the way, folks, that was about 2.5 years before the Beatles hit America. So I wasn't, as much as I loved them, I wasn't one of these kids that went out and got a guitar the day after they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. I had already been practicing the guitar for 2.5 years before that, taking lessons every week, thanks to my dad, who made sure I practiced. And so by the time I graduated high school, I was a musician, and I was already, by that time, as soon as I graduated high school and after the at the end of the summer, I had turned 18 years old and was able to sign a contract, and I wound up going out on the road for several years, for a few years at least at that point. And so I really did, it did give me a persona of being able to stand up in front of a couple of thousand people at a time and be able to perform. And I was also in a very creative world, and I was also in a world, again, this is going back from like 1972 to 75, but just around the time before, 75 was when I became a part of this Vegas thing. So it was during that time that I had realized that a few members of my family were involved in something other than a normal 9-to-5 job, like a lot of my other friends' fathers and parents were. And it put me in a way where I learned, above all, and I've always talked about this, whether it's in my presentations, whether it's the lectures that I give at colleges now, and definitely throughout my book, the one thing I learned in my life was you got to show respect, not just to the people who absolutely deserve it, but you got to show respect to everybody. And it's from that level that you let them chip away at it. And that's where you make your decisions as to who are the people in life that I should really know and who are those I shouldn't know. But more than anything, my family always taught me that there's a certain group of people that you constantly have to show respect to, because these are, as they've been written about hundreds of times in the past, these are the men of respect. And so growing up in that environment, around 1975, my godfather and my cousin, he was my oldest cousin, and when I say godfather, I don't mean like just that guy who takes, you know, who looks after you. This is legitimately from my birth, at my baptism, this guy was made my godfather. And he was very well connected in New Jersey. And he asked me if I wanted to come out to Vegas for my 22nd birthday. And, you know, I thought it was just he was being a nice guy and asking me if I wanted to come out for my birthday. And I got to tell you, when I got there on the morning or the late morning of my 22nd birthday, he got me a penthouse suite at the original MGM Grand. I know, Frank, you definitely know about that place, and I thought that was just fantastic. And later on, and having never gambled a day in my life, having been then taken down to the casino and finding out that I had a $25,000 credit line, and he was showing me how to gamble, but the odd thing was I was losing, and he told me I was doing just fine. And it was over the next few days that I found out that all I really was doing was being a part of something that was going on at the other end of the table. As I was playing the pass line, there were a couple of other guys playing the don't pass line that were literally winning everything I lost. Of course, you know, for those of you who know how to gamble, back in Vegas in those days, if the pass line, if the roller, the shooter, threw a 12, I would lose, but the pass line would not lose. So that was the only time that things didn't work out. But other than that, it wound up being the greatest 2 years of my life. They invited me to come to Vegas 24 times over 26 months. For a young kid, it was a lot of fun. I was never involved with what went on with that money once it left Las Vegas, and that's exactly how my godfather wanted it. But like all good things, this also had to come to an end when apparently somebody drank a little too much, talked a little too much to a couple of girls that he was trying to impress. And what he didn't realize was that one of the girls worked at one of the casinos that was being hit. And things came to a rapid end for the boys in New Jersey, which was where we all came from at that time, and how that happened. So that really was the gist. And then, so I guess, Denny, also what you wanted was what made me want to write this book or what caused me to write it?
Yeah, the motivation to write the book and what you had to consider is, you know, before you wrote it and since you wrote it.
Well, okay, what I had to consider. Wow, okay, what made me write it? Well, like I said, I always came from a very creative and talented background, so besides being a musician, I was also fortunate enough. I had the ability to write. I wrote very well. While I was on the road, I would write for one of New Jersey's biggest newspapers. Actually had a column at the time called John D. Amore on the Road. And while I was touring with some fairly famous bands, let me hang up this call that's coming in there. While I was on tour with some of these bands, I was writing a newspaper article for one of the big newspapers back in Jersey. So I did have that ability to not just perform and write songs, but I was a writer. So I do remember saying to my cousin, you know, this thing that you guys did in Vegas, I said, oh, what a great story that would make. And he very abruptly said, you can never write about this until three of us are gone. And I understood that. As a matter of fact, he didn't even say write about it. He said, you can never even talk about it until three of us are gone. So somewhere in the mid-80s, the boss left us. Somewhere in the early 90s, the guy who came up with the Vegas scam left us. And in 1998, I was told that my godfather had developed terminal cancer and that he would only have a few months left. And so I got together with him and told him, I said, look, you know, you're the third one, and pretty soon it looks like I'm going to have that ability to write that story that's been inside of me since 1977. And I just, you know, I needed to know. You got to tell me some of these things that actually happened that I only peripherally knew. And so he did convey the things that I needed to know. And shortly after he passed away, I wrote the book. And so then, and I probably told you this in the last time I was on the show, even after I finished the first real draft of the book, I knew that, again, based on what my parents, or at least my dad, had told me, you must always honor these men of respect, because that's just the way it went. And so I went back to New Jersey because by this time now, in 1999, I moved to Los Angeles, and by about late 2000 or early 2001, I had finished the manuscript for the book, or at least the first draft for the manuscript. And so I went back to New Jersey and went to one of our friends, and I passed it along, and I says, I need to know that this will be okay, and nobody will be upset that this book will be written. And it took quite a while, you know, because I don't have to tell you that these guys, they don't normally read books, so they especially don't read manuscripts. But it took several months before I got a phone call and was told to come back to New Jersey, which I did. And I was handed the manuscript with the simple letters of OK up in the top right-hand corner. And I was told that pretty much, and I know Frank can understand this, the scam that we did, it certainly was no longer possible to do that scam anymore. Once the corporations took over Las Vegas, you just can't walk out. You can't walk into a casino like you could back in the 70s and have a pit boss or a casino manager just nod and give you a $25,000 credit line anymore. Those days were long gone. So the casinos, the way they were run, that doesn't exist anymore. The guys are all gone. I'm not really revealing any specific names because I've changed all of the names of the participants. And, like I said, they're either gone or, and I should say, a lot of them have spent some time away, specifically for crimes that became public knowledge. So I really wasn't giving anything up. What the book really was about a 22-year-old kid who got to enjoy being around these guys, living the life. And, of course, on the other hand, I also got to see and hear about some things, and I got to lose some people that were close to me because that was the life that they led. They were much more involved in it than I was. It's a love story between a young man and his godfather, and I was lucky enough to live on the fringe of that world. So, with that being said, I then put the manuscript away for a while because I was living in Los Angeles, and I don't know if anybody knows this, but Los Angeles is not noted for getting books published. They are known for getting movies made. So I was very fortunate because I took the time to go to school and learn how to write screenplays. I mixed and mingled with some of the best, and it turned out that within about a year and a half of going from writing a manuscript to learning the screenwriting process, I was good enough to now start editing screenplays for the people who actually taught me how to write screenplays. I took to it like the proverbial fish takes to water. So I got involved in the film industry for quite a bit and, of course, wrote my version of my book, The Boss Always Sits in the Back. But, this is absolutely true, by this time I was in my late 40s, early 50s, and I don't care what anybody says. They say you're not supposed to talk about this stuff, but I have no problem with it. There is, as women have found in the corporate world, that there is a certain wall that they must overcome. In the film industry, if you want to break into it when you're in your early 50s, you hit a thing called the gray wall. And I needed to find my way either through it, around it, or over it. So I became a part of it, and I wound up just being that ghostwriter, what we call script doctors, a person who you never hear about, but we get paid to rewrite screenplays that production companies or movie studios option or purchase, and they just love the screenplay, but they don't love it enough that they want to have some changes made to it. So a producer will usually rewrite a screenplay with his notes or her notes, hand it off to somebody like a script doctor, and we make the changes, though we get absolutely no credit on screen for that. So after doing that for several years and being somewhat successful at it, I'm sure I don't have to tell you guys because you all heard about it several years ago, Hollywood hit what was called a writer's strike, and once that happened, things got very slow for us. So I decided to take the book out of my, it's no longer out of your desk and dust it off. You take it out of your computer, you find your file, and you reopen it, and you rewrite the book so that it's perfect. And I started the process of looking for an agent. Well, I don't have to tell you what it was like to look for an agent when you're now in your 50s, and it's your only book that you've ever written, and you don't know if you're going to write another book. And unless you're somebody like Frank, you know, who has a direct connection with some of those things that took place and have a great attachment to a film like Casino, for guys like me, it was a little bit more difficult to find a publisher. Forget a publisher. It was a little bit more difficult to find an agent who'd be willing to take on my story and go out and try to sell one book that I might write for the rest of my life. So with the help of a few friends who invested in me and my book, I self-published it about 2 years ago. And though I am not, or at that point, I was not a big fan of Facebook about 2.5-3 years ago, I really have to tell you that because of the various pages that are connected to what our story is about, the mob, the mafia, the cities in Union City, the cities in New Jersey where I was born and raised. Well, I got a motorcycle going by outside here. But the cities in New Jersey where I was born and then the cities where I was raised, the book took off. It took off really well. And so because of that, of course, now you get agents knocking at your doors. And so my first argument was, being a stubborn Italian, where were you when I first came looking for you, and now you want to ride, now you're telling me how great I am, how great my book is, and you want to ride my wave. But on the other hand, I also needed to accept their help, because the plan is to get the book picked up by a major publisher, and obviously a major publisher can certainly do what I can't on a national and international level. So that's where I am right now. But since then, I've been asked to write a couple of other books, co-write a couple of other books. One of my screenplays, a publisher has asked me to turn that into a novel. So a lot of good things have happened. But I'll tell you what's the best thing to come down the pike in a long time is that I've been asked to be a speaker at MobCon at the end of September. Now, I think I must have talked for about 15 minutes straight, and my voice is starting to go like Frank's is starting to go. So, Denny, what else you want to know?
Okay, well, first, what I want to do is ask you one more question about the book or about the subject of the book, and then I want to ask you some questions, as time permits, about more about publishing and writing. So the last question about the content of the book is that in the book you already said that you fictionalized, you didn't use real names and so forth. Is it about a specific crime family, or would you just assume not say?
Oh, it's in the book. My family, going back to the 40s and through the 50s, was always connected to the Genovese family out of New York.
Okay, Genovese family out of New York. Now, What I wanted to ask you regarding writing, and if Frank still got some voice left between the three of us, we can talk about it because we all have some writing experiences. And the people you'll meet at MobCon, some I'm sure several in the audience will have thought at one time or another about writing a book, and some of them probably have done it. For those who are thinking about writing a book and haven't gotten their feet wet yet, there are different options writers have for publishing. There is, of course, the traditional house, the so-called the royalty-paying publishing companies. And as you said, you have the major companies, which, you know, have the deepest pockets and can do the most for you. And then you can also have small presses and medium-sized presses. Another option is the one you chose, which is the self-publishing. And that pretty much means that you basically have the book, you pay a fee, depending on who you go through, to have the book published, the printing done, and that kind of thing. There's not a publisher behind you as far as promoting and doing that type of thing. Now, for the people that are thinking maybe about doing a book and don't want to go through the query letter route of trying to find a publisher, a traditional publisher, what would you guesstimate they would have to be looking at realistically to get a quality book printed and so forth and, you know, going to self-publishing?
Okay, first thing that I would tell them is this. If you've never written a book before and think you can write a book, don't depend on your friends and your family for their opinion on the quality of your story. They know you. The majority of them are going to tell you it's great. Don't do it. No matter where you live in this country nowadays, if you live anywhere near a major city, or a large city, there are writers groups. When I got to Los Angeles in 1999, Before I was even there a week and a half, I joined the writers group of Studio City, and I was immediately, once a week, I sat in a small theater, which held maybe 50 people, but there was about 35 in the group of other writers. And every week, I got to hear, and I also got to be part of, a group of writers where we would put our material up. And I got to see who great writers were, and I got to take advice from, and I took advice from them. And let me tell you, and I tell this to everybody, I got a better education from the bad writers than I did from the good writers, because it was from the bad writers that I learned what not to do. So I give that advice to everybody. Don't take the advice of the people who are close to you as far as the quality of your story. They'll always pat you on the back. Join a writer's group if you've never written anything before and you want to write a book. It may take a little bit more time for you to get your book done, but let me tell you, and I say this in my own book, in the acknowledgments, if it wasn't for the writer's group of Studio City, it's them who helped me take a good story and make it a great story. So that's the first thing I tell people. Now, if you're ready to do it yourself, here's the thing about self-publishing. The good thing is you own your rights to your own story. You're not giving up a thing. But you are becoming everything to that book. You are becoming your own agent, your own publicist, your own marketing department, your own distributing department. Personally, because I have pages in my book that are glossy color pictures, you can't get them printed. You can't let Amazon print your book. You can't go to print on demand. You have to go to a legitimate printing company. Now, I used one that's, of course, in California. It's called Bang Printing. I support them wholeheartedly, and let me tell you why. They are There's a lot of printing companies. There's a lot of people who say they are printing companies. And they'll print your book. They'll get your book printed. But they'll print it in Canada. They'll print it in China. They'll print it in Mexico. My books were printed in the United States. And they came right to me, and they were perfect. And I know people who tried to get a better deal by saving 50 cents a copy, a buck a copy, and they sent it out of the country to print them, and they wound up having the quality of what came back was pure crap, or the shipping charges were horrendous. So if you're going to print it, if you don't have any pictures in your book, then you can let Amazon or any print-on-demand company print it for you. But in my case, I needed to get a quality printer. I did that. I went to a quality bookbinder. I was very happy. Everybody who got a copy of my book said, it is an amazing book. Not just the story, but the quality of the book itself. Okay. Then you need to become your own distributor. You have to contact the bookstores. You have to make your deal with Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Oh, and by the way, I was always talking, in what I was just saying, was nothing but print books. And now you got to decide, do I want a hardcover? Do I want paperback? Do I want both? But above all, you got to remember, guys like me and Frank and Denny, we're not 32-year-old guys anymore, and you have to cater to that audience. And that audience, a lot of them don't read hardcover or paperback books anymore. They read e-books through their Kindle, through their Nooks, through their iPads. So you have to be able to get your book formatted in those versions. And it's not as simple as you just saying, okay, I'll send my Word document to Amazon or my Word document to Barnes & Noble for their Nook. It doesn't work like that. You have to find a legitimate, quality company who can format these e-books, set up your page on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and iTunes so that you could sell it. And I did that. And, you know, if anybody wants a name of a company, it's Genius Book Services. They're out of Tarzana, California. And, again, I highly recommend this company. They were outstanding. They were outstanding to the point where other people who've written books have said to me, why is the quality of your e-book so much better than mine? And I told them because I took the effort to do all the right things, which is obviously something we who probably listen to this show, have all been raised to do. Always do the right thing, even when it comes to publishing your book. So what does it cost? What does it cost you? Let me tell you something. I went out and I borrowed about $20,000 to make sure that I did this right. I hired a publicist to do my first tour. I did as many radio. You have to be able to do radio shows, TV shows. I've lost track of how many Good Morning Jacksonville, Good Morning Tampa, Good Morning New York, Good Morning Elmira, New York, Good Morning Chicago. How many TV shows I must have done, radio shows, internet radio shows, and regular on-air radio shows. If you can get on satellite radio shows, do it. Promote it. You have to wake up in the morning doing what you hope an agent will do. And let me tell you something. An agent doesn't even do it. You got to wake up in the morning and believe in your product and think of nothing but selling your product that day. How many bookstores can you ship your book to? And they all want different deals. I've done deals with bookstores where they'll take anywhere from 20% of your book to 40% of your book. I've had arguments with Barnes & Noble because they want you to deal with a certain wholesalers who want 60% of your book, plus you got to do the shipping, plus you got to sign agreements where you're wondering, where am I going to make money? Now, Denny brought up a great point. A lot of us would really rather go with the traditional. Now, let me tell you something. If you self-publish, you will make more money per copy. I'm just going to throw this out there. You'll make more money per copy, whether you sell your e-books or your printed books. Maybe you'll sell what, 20? Because you got to remember, yeah, your family's going to buy them, your friends are going to buy them, but that's not where you're going to make your money. You're going to make your money by selling it to people who love the story that you're telling.
And,
John? Yeah.
John? I hate to do this to you, but we're out of time. We just got cut off. But I want to continue this at another time because it's a very interesting subject and there's a lot to talk about. But thanks so much for coming back on with us tonight, and we'll see you in about 4 weeks.
I'm sorry I talked so much.
At MobCon 2014.
I'm really sorry that I just rambled and rambled, and I haven't even had any coffee yet today. But
we didn't have the time to do it all.
Yeah, but so, I'm really honored that you guys are having me on the show. I'm honored that I'm going to be at MobCon, and I just can't wait to shake hands with both of you.
Okay, John, thanks a million again, and we'll see you in Vegas on the 26th, 27th, and 8th of September. And please tune in again on September 8th, and we'll be back for the next edition of Frank's World. And don't forget to check out the MobCon site at www.mob-con.net. And if you're thinking about coming to MobCon, remember Frank's offer, call Becky and mention that you heard about the MobCon on tonight's Frank's World show, and you'll get a 20% discount if you want to take the tour on the Friday night before or on the admission to the conference itself. Okay, thanks very much, everybody. Good night, and have a great week. Good night, John. Good night, Frank.
Good night, everybody.